At Alma, we know the connection between you and your therapist matters. But if you're already feeling stressed and burnt out, the idea of trying to find a therapist you really connect with can be overwhelming. That's why Alma's focused on helping you find the right therapist for you. When you browse their online directory, you can filter by the qualities that are most important to you. Then, book free 15-minute consultations with any therapist you're interested in seeing. And because 95% of therapists at Alma accept insurance, you can find care that's affordable too. You want to talk to someone, but not just anyone. Alma is there to help you find the right fit. Visit helloalma.com/therapy30 to schedule a free consultation today. That's helloalma.com/therapy30.
Talk is Jericho, baby. Talk is Jericho.
Welcome to Talk is Jericho. It's the pod of thunder and rock and roll. And today, no more BS, because Paul White is all elite and doing color commentary for AEW's Monday Night Elevation show on YouTube. Check him out. Just debuted a couple days ago. You'll also eventually see him in the AEW ring. We'll talk about that. We're going to hear how it all happened today. We'll find out what made Big Paul leave WWE after 23 years and sign with AEW. Paul's talking about his last run in WWE, the final straw that prompted him to leave, and the conversation he had with Vince McMahon after he announced his departure. Paul also recounts his failed story idea with Justin Bieber and John Cena, WWE's reaction to his Big Show burger pitch, and what was supposed to happen at the first ever Andre the Giant Battle Royal. So many great giant stories coming up with one of my favorite guys in the business and my favorite former tag team partner, Paul White. Let's get it started now on Talk is Jericho. So lots of surprises in AEW. One of my favorites over the last 6 months or so is Paul White coming to AEW. And we had spoke about this a little bit, but I had no idea that you had actually signed and that you were actually coming, which was amazing to me and a great surprise and a huge one for us in our company.
As hard as it is to believe in today's technology world that kayfabe still exists.
That's right. Yeah, actually still was a surprise.
Yeah, but when only two people know about it, you know, it actually lasted because, when my deal ended with WWE, I ended up signing a termination of services agreement because, you know, they want to try to give me a Legends deal and stuff like that, and that I wanted to move on and do other things. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, let's face it, I sat on the bench there enough for a while. So, and then Tony and I talked and we kept it quiet and it was good. I mean, like, I didn't tell friends or, you know, I didn't tell you, obviously, you know what I mean? But I kept it quiet because I knew those that are in the business would appreciate getting popped. So, you know.
So I guess, and you mentioned sitting on the bench for a long time. What was kind of the final straw for you to leave? Because it's hard to leave that environment, well, as you know.
The writing on the wall when I figured I couldn't change anything in WWE was about 5 years ago. I got a speech that I was told I would never main event a WrestleMania again. I would never main event a pay-per-view again. And I would only be used to get over NXT talent because, you know, they got to think about the future of the business.
You actually were told that?
I was told that to my face, yeah. Not by Vince, but by somebody in the organization that, you know, pretty high up.
A higher up powers that be is basically telling you. Are they telling you this matter-of-factly? Or are they telling
you? Yeah, pretty matter-of-fact. Like, you know, this is it, you know. Because at the time, 5 years ago, there weren't any options, you know, so they felt because I was very frustrated about positioning and I felt a little bit handcuffed a little bit because I couldn't help like I wanted to help.
Right.
You know, and then it was like, you know, like, what's going on? You guys are not letting me contribute like I can contribute. You know, you're kind of handcuffing me a little bit. And so then I had that meeting and I was told why, you know, I just... That was that. So that was the start of me really realizing that, okay, and believe it or not, I was still so company-oriented and company-driven that I thought, you know what, I'll take this challenge and I'll work my way out of it. You know, cream always rises to the top kind of thing. And then foolish me, you know, the harder I worked, it didn't matter. They thanked me for the hard work, you know, they paid me. But there was nothing that I could do that would change their minds at that point. You know?
Now, why do you think that is? Because let me just say this, not just because you're here, but definitely one of the best big men of all time.
Thank you.
I say it all the time. My favorite tag team partner.
Mine too. I love you too.
Thank you. But like a motivated Big Show is dangerous with your matches with Brock and matches with like every time the ball was given to you, you took it and ran with it.
I don't know, other than the fact that, you know, for whatever reason, I always hit a ceiling in WWE. I always hit a spot where I would start doing really well, start getting over, start accomplishing things, and then either I would be off TV for a few months or for some unknown reason, I'd get knocked out by a mechanical bull.
Right.
You know, which is your favorite, where you flipped your shit over. That was a great text message that day. Have you lost your effing mind? But
well, that was 6 months of us being this tag team where we had rebuilt you into what you should be, the giant destroyer. And then the week after we break up, then you're funny show fun guy again.
It's so hard to try to understand what it is. I mean, for a lot of times, like WWE is it's an incredible organization. It's a very well-run machine, but it's also a shark tank. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It is. And that was one of the things I had trouble adjusting. I've said that on other interviews before. I had trouble adjusting to that when I first got there. You know, I wasn't prepared for that constant turmoil that goes on there.
Political machinations.
Political machinations on so many levels. And for me, I think a lot of it was, you know, I actually made the joke to Vince. So let me get this right. When I smoked 2 packs of cigarettes and was 500 pounds, I was a world champion. Now I've got a 6-pack and I can't even get a match. So explain that one to me. You know, it's like I went and did everything to all the stuff that, well, you're not doing this because you're not in this shape. You're not as aesthetically pleasing. You know, all the hints that were dropped as to why I didn't do well at 480 or 500 or your conditioning. Okay, so I went out and got all that done. And then it was like, well, you know.
But you know what always confuses me about that, Paul, is like, you know, you are a legit giant.
Right.
I don't know many giants that have 6-packs. And listen, you got it, and that's very admirable. But what does that have to do with the fact that you're a giant?
It doesn't have anything to do with the price of tea in Hong Kong. It means absolutely nothing. It's just, but you know how the pressures are there because there's a certain look. What do I got to do to get recognized? What do I have to do to get put back in the mix? Why am I not in the mix? Why am I not in the mix? And that's just upper level decisions. I mean, you know, you're a number, you're an algorithm, you know, and they're going to see what makes everything else the most money possible. You know what I mean? It's not necessarily for your career benefit. It's who they think should be somewhere, who they want to push, who they want to see the future as. And sometimes it's happened to Kane too.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you look at Kane. I mean, and Kane, God bless him. He's such a good guy that, you know, kind of like me, he rolled through and did whatever they asked. You know what I mean? But, you know, it's just that thing. They'll run somebody for so long. And then now, okay, well, this guy's over. And he still stays over no matter what we do to him. Well, then we can try to use that to get these other guys over.
Do you think another reason is because you're very go with the flow, like you said, too nice, maybe?
Well, my thing was, I signed a contract, so I just did what I mean, you know, I'm not going to sit there and argue. I was never a guy to go in there and do the political fight and argue and text and all that stuff. That was never my MO. I trusted WWE to kind of have my best interests, you know what I mean? And sometimes, look, in the big picture, I had a great career, traveled the world, made a good living, you know, so it seems counterproductive to say I could have done a lot more, you know what I mean? But that's I think every talent feels that way, that things don't turn out maybe like they think they should. But I think I definitely could have been a lot better asset. But WWE got to a point where they were bringing in so much new talent that they weren't really building talent like they used to. It was newer's better. Every 2 weeks, every 3 weeks, something new. Like, you know, I went through that first battle royal that we had, that first Andre battle royal. I was supposed to win that. And then the day of, they're like, oh, we're going to go with Cesaro. And I'm like, okay, Cesaro's a great dude, incredible talent, speaks 5 languages. You know, this is a guy that absolutely I'll get behind, no problem. And I put him over the best way I could. He slammed me over the top. I shook his hand at the end. That's what you do in this business. You want to make guys.
Right.
You know, and then I watched Cesaro just wither on the vine, because they didn't do nothing with him. And basically, he was a piece to give a chance for Paul Heyman to be on TV until Brock came back.
Right.
You know what I mean? So it again, but that was the stack of the cards, the stack of the pieces to get to the talent that they really wanted to market, they really wanted to use, and they really wanted to depend on for everything. So it's really weird when you try to sit and look at the dynamic of it. And I'm not bitter. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That's my main thing I want people to understand. I'm not bitter, but it's one of those kind of things that I feel a little bit sad that I didn't get to do as much as I could have done for them. And finally, just after a while, when the opportunity came up, and I got tired of trying to prove to them what I could do for them. You know, I can walk down the street. I can't walk down the street without being
right.
recognized. I can't go in the grocery store without doing something. Like, I'm a constant billboard of everything that I've done, and I never felt like WWE really took advantage. They kind of half-assed it on some things. You know what I mean? And it was like, oh, maybe that's too much. Let's pull back. That's too much. Let's pull back, because this is not the direction we want to go. Just like the whole angle with Hunter that one time, that the fans went crazy because Hunter and I got into a big look on the ramp, you know, when they were really doing the where they were running the company and all that stuff and screwing the guys over. And just off a look, like, the fans wanted to see it. So we built that up and all that, and then it never turned into a match. Mm. Like, Hunter didn't want to wrestle me at SummerSlam, didn't want to put me over in a pay-per-view. You know, there's not going to be a match. You know, you'll get to knock me out, and that's the end of it. And that's what happened, where I'm thinking, like, well, if this is created and this has this natural momentum, why wouldn't we go to a pay-per-view? Why wouldn't we go further with it to it would help my career, it would help my positioning, you know, and I don't care about winning. Hunter can drop me with the pedigree. I've never been – I don't care about that, mm-hmm. you know. I want to tell good stories. And I think that's the best way to describe it. I wanted to be involved in better stories and tell better stories. And I went from not being able to tell stories to turn into 7-foot enhancement talent. Mm. And that's what I was, because I could work with anybody. I could get anybody over at sometimes – even at the point where I was trying so hard to get other people over that it was taken away from what I could do. Because I'm not going to go out there and do all my moves just to get them in. There's a story. There's a psychology to it. It doesn't make sense. So you're trying to bring other people up and bring them along and focus them, which is our business. And it's not real. And I understand that. But at the same time, a lot of those situations I was put in, it's because I was the only guy that could do it, that had any recognition, mm-hmm. that could give any validity to what they were trying to build, because they had run through so much talent and nobody was really, lack of return, nobody was really over enough where they're in a position where they could give. So I got saddled with that. So, I mean, you know, it gave me job security for a while. So,
well, it's amazing to me, though, because they're so critically revered that Andre the Giant is in WWE, and with Vincent and, you know, Stephanie and Shane and the whole family. It's like they had a modern day Andre, and nothing against him.
I wasn't theirs. I wasn't
you came
theirs.
From WCW.
I came from WCW.
But you were still young in the business, though. It was only 3 years.
Yeah,
or so.
But it doesn't matter, because, I mean, like, Jim Ross called me after Halloween Havoc and offered me double what WCW was paying me if I'd leave. Mm-hmm. And me not knowing any better, I just said, well, no. I said, I signed a contract here, so when it expires, I'll be happy to talk to you. Mm-hmm. You know, but I think, and the thing is I tried really hard to come to WWE first. And then I got, you know, I wasn't trained. And Bob Collins, the famous joke with Bob Collins and I was, he gave me a card and gave me the broom because I was messing up his autograph appearance, because all the kids were coming up to me wanting to know who I was. And I was screwing up his WWE ice cream party. So I got a card and a broom. So I was like, okay, well, I guess I got to go get trained.
Right.
So, you know.
When Tony and I were talking about having you come in, and I said, it's so multifaceted. You can wrestle when the time is right, personality, like you said, and you're doing commentary, we'll talk about that. But here's what I said. I said one of the biggest values of Paul is that he's, like you mentioned, the most recognizable, one of the most recognizable, right. You know, pro wrestlers that's synonymous with WWE. If he comes to AEW, perception is reality. And also, if we want to get a TV deal in freaking India, who's on the show? Paul White, everyone knows.
Yeah,
that's currency.
Well, it's time well invested, but that's the thing. That's one of the things that attracted me so much about coming here. Plus, all my friends are here. Mm-hmm. You're here. Billy Gunn's here. Arn Anderson's here. Mm-hmm. Cody's here. Dustin's here. You know, there's a lot of crew people that I knew in WWE that are actually here.
That's true.
There's crew people from WCW that I knew that are here. So for me, it was a chance because I needed a restart. You know, after the last Raw that I did that was just absolutely, it was absolutely horrendous, you know, between.
Let's talk about that.
Well, I don't know what, because I was going through contract negotiations then. So sometimes when you're going through contract negotiations with them, they'll try to, lack of a better term, they'll try to make things a little bit more awkward, difficult, or to prove a point, you know. And it's part of the psychology of the game, you know what I mean? And so they wanted Randy Orton to pie face me into a chair, which basically pushed me in the face and knocked me down. And then I'm supposed to just sit there in a chair and take it. And I'm like, well, he's not going to shove me on my ass. I mean, no disrespect to Randy, but Randy knows he couldn't do it if I didn't want him to.
Right.
You know?
Not a lot of people could.
You know, like, so to do something accordingly, yeah, Randy can put his hand on my chest and I'll sit down because I'm not going to fight Randy because he's trying to get in my head. You can always do that. Story, even though it's the wrong story to tell with me. I mean, Randy put his hands on me, and all serious, a giant, should have knocked him the hell out in the hallway. Mm-hmm. That would have been good business. But then to go to the ring and sit on the ramp on the stage with Hogan and Flair and a lot of Booker was out there, you know, like a lot of Hall of Fame and legends, and it's like they're really trying to shove me into this. They're trying to shove me down the road because, yeah, they want to use my notoriety to do community work, to do overseas media, to do all that stuff. They're taking my passion away from me. You know, they were taking wrestling away from me. And then there to, you know, to sit there on the ramp and then, you know, get called a has-been while I sit there and watch a match. It's just, you talk so much about legends and respect for Hall of Famers. But like anytime Hall of Famers around, they get run into the ground. You know, and that's one of those kind of things where, you know, that machine is always moving forward. It's about, you know, moving forward and any blood that they can get out of whatever stone it is, they're going to get that last drop, you know, until there's nothing left for anyone. The talent doesn't have anything left, you know, the fans don't have anything left for them, you know. And for me, that was just the icing on the cake where I'm like, you know, I need to restart. I need to rebrand myself. There was a couple of business deals that I tried to do with WWE and using my own brand. And it was incredible to me after 20 years of building a brand because they own the intellectual property. I wanted to do it. I tell you the truth. I wanted to do a Big Show Burger.
Big Show Burger?
Big Show Burger. It would have been a half-pound patty, no antibiotics, no hormones, you know, anywhere in the U.S. in 36 hours. You know,
like an online order.
Yeah, you order it online.
That's a great idea.
It's great, humane, everything done properly. So I went to them to say, hey, this is what I want to do. I had it set up. I reached out to Wolfgang Puck, and we were going to do a meatloaf together to promote it on like an infomercial and stuff like that. Talk about Big Show Burgers, you know. And you would have thought that I was some guy that walked in off the street with the numbers that they hit me, that they wanted me to use a brand that I helped build.
Wow.
I mean, we're talking seven figures up front, 18 months later, another installment of seven figures, you know, like 30-something percent of profit. Mm. Like, I'm like, oh, okay.
That's what they wanted from you?
From me. Yeah, they wanted me to cough up seven figures right off the bat. Then 18 months later, another seven figures.
For what?
It just killed the whole deal for me. Because I wanted to do, like, my thing was, and this was before COVID, but I wanted to get some food trucks, wrap them in Big Show Burger trucks, and then, you know, like at WrestleMania, you know, with fan access, I was going to cook burgers and sell them to fans and help promote. I mean, you know the whole gimmick. It's fun to interact with the fans. It's fun TV. And here's the thing, you know, there's the Big Show Burger. But, you know, for whatever reason, the people that I were dealing with, and it's not one of those things like, you know, I could have gone to Vince and been like, hey, what the hell?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But it just turned me off so bad and put things in real perspective. You know, I mean, I've been playing the Big Show for 20 years, but far as they're concerned, that anybody could play the Big Show.
Right.
You know, not just Paul White, because they look at it like it's a Marvel character or a Disney character, and they own that intellectual property. And then I'm thinking about the prices they were hitting me with to do the Big Show burger, you know, and I know I had done Honeycomb and I've done some other things over the years that weren't even remotely close to that kind of payoff. I'm just like, you know, I see the writing on the wall. So the writing on the wall was either A, we don't want you to do this, we don't want you to be successful, you know what I mean? Or, you know what, we see a chance here to make a cash grab. You know what I mean? I just don't understand. Just, and the attitude was very, very blasé. Well, this is what it is.
Like they're doing you a favor.
Like they're doing me a favor. Right. It's like, you know, and there's so many instances over the years you have to look at, and that's okay because that's business. I get it. And the problem was is I put personal feelings and family and all that stuff that they say, oh, your family and all that, and when it comes down to the nuts and bolts, it's family when it suits them.
Right.
But when it doesn't suit them, it's business. So in all actuality, it's just business all the way around. And it's not a negative thing. Look, that's, you know, I know people are probably going to think I'm bitching, and I'm really not. I'm just saying, like, there comes a point in a talent's life where you have to do what's best for yourself mentally. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not about the financial dollar and all that kind of stuff. Not saying that I'm not making a great, I'm blown away by the deal that I got here. So somebody named Chris Irvine must have put in a good word for me because I'm blown away by the ways Tony's treating me, AEW's treating me, the deal that they've given me, the opportunity for me to do so many things between create shows and work with TNT and some other stuff. Like there's a lot of big stuff happening now that it's so surreal to me because a lot of those opportunities were denied to me before. Like I wasn't in that wheelhouse. I wasn't John Cena. I wasn't Triple H. I wasn't, you know what I mean? I wasn't who they wanted those opportunities for. Mm-hmm. I mean, years ago, I don't think I've ever told anyone this on air, but years ago I had worked out for one of the SummerSlams in LA. I had worked out with a very good friend who was working with Scooter Braun and Justin Bieber. And it was going to be John Cena, the Big Show, and Justin Bieber versus the Wyatts at SummerSlam. Mm. And this deal was really, like, this was a bit like Bieber was on board. He was excited. He wanted to, you know, work out with John and I. Like, this was a really, really big deal.
It's huge.
And this is when that app first came out and all that other crap, you know. And then one of the people that are making decisions said, I just don't see how Justin Bieber's going to relate to our audience. And it's like, does anyone not see the amount of eyes that Justin Bieber would bring
right
to that match? You know, and I think WWE offered to help promote his album or something. You're dealing with Scooter Braun. Right. Scooter Braun's all about cash. And they, you know, they jacked Scooter around for about 2 weeks. And Scooter's like, listen, it's not going to happen. I got the kid $1 million to watch a soccer game and they're flying down in a private jet.
Yeah.
You know.
Like, I had just a quick second. I had Chad Smith from the Red Hot Chili Peppers had done a bunch of stuff with Will Ferrell because, you know, they look exactly the same.
Right.
And they had done a drum off in L.A. and they wanted to do something for charity at WrestleMania. And they were like, well, you have to understand, we don't really pay guys. I said, this is Will Ferrell.
Yeah.
Like, it's, hey, dudes, it's Will Ferrell. If you had Will Ferrell and Chad Smith in a whatever, right, face off, you know, put them in a tag team match, what, like, you could do a million things. Will Ferrell in WWE on WrestleMania would make a difference.
Of course.
But we don't really pay our celebrities. Well, then you guys are idiots because he wants to do it. All he wants to do is have a good donation for his charity.
Right. That's not like the money is going to him. It's donating to charity. So
flip the $500,000 to Will Ferrell's charity and get him on the show and have that recognition.
Right.
You know, they wouldn't do it.
No, it's weird how that mentality works sometimes because you get put in a box and you know that as a talent, you bring ideas and it's not going to happen.
Yeah.
And then other things will happen and you'd be like, how the hell did that happen? You know?
Yeah.
And that's, you know, that's just the way the ball bounces sometimes.
Well, that's the system there. And when you work there, you get used to it because, once again, then this is not speaking from any sort of bitterness or anything. It's just the way it is. It's the WWE system. They're very successful.
And you're always going to be that mule chasing.
It's never going to change. That's just the way it is.
It's the way it is. It's done by design. you either learn to become a gear in the cog of the machine, or you don't fit in and you're not there. You know, but what's funny is if you don't really realize you're a gear in the cog because you're fighting so hard. You're fighting for everything. You're fighting for position. You're fighting for, you know, back in the day you used to fight for payoffs and stuff like that, for pay-per-views and positions on the card because it made a difference whether you were on first or whether you're on before intermission or after intermission. Like all those things were weighed in. So you keep an environment of turmoil amongst the talent. And while the talent's fighting with each other, you know what I mean? Then the guys in charge can do whatever. You know what I mean? Because how many times, you know what I mean? Like it's a great system in how they will change the narrative so that it's you that needs them and they're doing you a favor. They use keywords like honor and
family
and
loyalty.
Yeah. Loyalty, you know, and all this kind of stuff. But at the same time, if something happens, you'll get dropped like a hot rock.
Well, and the way I always said it too, it's like, you know, like WWE made me a lot of money. Guys will say, yeah. And I made WWE a lot of money in return.
True.
Yeah. You know, just as much as with a fraction of what we made them is what we got paid. Well, and that's fine.
It's funny. I was talking to JJ Dillon, who I love for a long time, you know, and, I told JJ and I said, yeah, I said, I'm not mad. I said, they gave me a lot of money. And JJ says, no, you earned a lot of money. And it's a different attitude. But my whole thing is I'm chill. Like there's no, I sleep good at night. I sleep better now than I ever have, you know, because my WWE stuff is done.
Yeah.
I went through that. I did that. And now I have this incredible opportunity to not be shipped off to Shady Pines. I get to do some color commentating, which I'm super excited about. And, you know, and then I get to wrestle and work into a program if it comes along that's worthy of me being a part of, and I can contribute in that for AEW.
Well, and that's the thing. That's another thing I said to Tony. We can use show, Paul, at this point as an attraction the way you should be used. You don't have to be wrestling every week.
No, but I shouldn't be on TV every week. I shouldn't have been.
But when you do finally show up to wrestle, that means something, you know?
And then I can bring all the tools to the table that I have to help make it mean something. But, you know, if it's on TV, you know, every night.
Every week,
Every week. Or sometimes I was working Raw and SmackDown twice a week. Sometimes two matches on Raw and two matches on SmackDown some weeks, you know, that it becomes too much. You're not special anymore.
Was it hard for you to actually take that step to walk away?
It was brutal.
Because we did it before in 1999 with WCW.
I did it. Yeah, we left WCW, but you and I both knew that boat was sinking.
Yeah.
You could feel that oppressive, like, wow, this is not the place to be, you know? And to that point, when you and I went to WWE, it was radically different because you saw so much potential. If you could get your act together and get in the right place and the right positioning, you were going to be a big star and you were going to make a ton of money.
The payoffs. Yeah.
Yeah. The payoffs were huge. I mean, you know, like, you know, it was, we knew when to get off. And that's where the things have turned for WWE too, because I don't think, you know, the payoffs aren't there like they used to be. Mm. You know, of course, everything's changed during COVID. You know what I mean? But it's, you know, WWE is doing really well now, you know, but I don't know if even these younger guys know really what they should be getting
what
paid
that means,
for
right.
what they're doing. Does that make sense?
It sure does. Sure
you know,
does.
I wonder sometimes, and it's like, you know, I mean, who knows? Some of them might be doing really well, and that's my thing. I've never begrudged anybody for doing well or making money. Mm-hmm. I've never begrudged that, never been jealous of that, because if they did well, then that means I can do well too. I just got to work hard. I might have to work harder. I might have to hunt harder for an opportunity, but the opportunity is there.
Right.
And when that opportunity is blatantly taken away from you, said you'll never do this, you'll never do that, well, that's a little disheartening, you know? And then...
But you said it was brutal to actually leave there.
It was brutal to actually leave because you do have friends and you do have family because you've got people you've spent over 20 plus years with. You have relationships. You have like people you look forward to seeing. And then you have to know that like, look, yeah, I have to leave. Mm-hmm. There's nothing here for me to do anymore except go in a direction that I'm not ready to go in. You know, I didn't want to be a Sergeant Slaughter, no offense to Sarge, But I didn't want to be a Sergeant Slaughter that come around, that did the golf tournaments, that, you know. I mean, at one time, Sergeant Slaughter was one of the biggest stars in the business.
Absolutely.
He sold more action figures than G.I. Joe. He sold more action figures like Barbie or something like that.
Yep.
You know what I mean? But everybody has their own thing of what they're comfortable with and what they're happy with. You know, my thing is I got pulled out when I got hurt. And because, you know, I was working with Braun and my hip joint looked like a bowling ball with the holes in it, you know. I had a chance to unplug a little bit with that and step away from it and start realizing that, you know, I need to find something that makes me happy, you know. And I had a good time filming the Big Show show. Mm-hmm. That was a great, believe it or not, that was a great confidence booster for me.
Well, that's huge. You're the star of your own Netflix show. That's massive.
I mean, I didn't get to negotiate what I made for it. I didn't even have my own parking spot, but that's...
Was that a WWE deal?
Of course it was.
Okay, gotcha.
Parking spot. Yeah, I had to park in the visitor lot, and they would come get me in my own golf cart, like, you know.
The show says my name in the title.
It says my name on it, but... Dr. Phil had a parking, and actually Dr. Phil had a parking spot in front of one of the buildings that I rented, because we did stay, it's 25 and 26, not me, but Netflix and WWE,
right.
You know, they were like, oh, you know, you can't have a drive on. I'm like, thanks. You know, like.
Classic, right?
Classic. Like, here's this great opportunity. You're going to do fantastic. But just remember who you are.
That's right.
Just remember where your place is, yeah. You know, so. But, you know, it was great confidence booster for me because it was something way out of my comfort level, but it was something I knew I could do. It's something I wanted to do. And
you got great comedic timing, though, so that wasn't a surprise for me.
Well, thank you. But for me, it was nerve-wracking.
It
was nerve-wracking. And then to do it, and you know what? For a first season, everything we did, I'm very happy with it. I got three new daughters in my life now. You know, like I still stay in touch with the girls. I stay in touch with Allison, you know.
Is that something you might do more of?
I think so. I'm actually kicking around with a writer buddy of mine now of putting a show together, but a different kind of show.
Oh, so Big Show show is done at this point?
Well, yeah, Big Show. We didn't get renewed by Netflix.
Gotcha.
And that was a partnership deal with Netflix and WWE, and that's one of those kind of things where I think if things would have been different in timing, because, you know, we really didn't get to promote it. WWE was supposed to really promote it, but they were on a mad panic to figure out where to put WrestleMania and COVID and all this other stuff. I mean, we had a billboard in Times Square, but Times Square was shut down
because
of COVID. Like, nobody saw it. Like, but I'm still grateful for all the people that come up and thank me. And I've got a whole new demographic now from 8 to 14-year-old girls who love me as a dad on the show. So that's a whole new... Because I have girls now, younger girls that are fans, which I never really had. Mm-hmm. I had boys and I had... You know, older women and older men and stuff like that, you know, but I never had the young girl fan following, and that show helped create a new audience for me and a new demographic. So
when you had you been watching AEW, keeping an eye on what's going on when you started thinking about maybe I might leave?
Oh, yeah. I was watching stuff. Well, I always kept up with what you were doing and Cody was doing, and I would send you guys, you know, text here now and then.
We were trying to get you to come to the show in Miami last year. Right?
Yeah,
before lockdown.
I know.
Bess was there. Your wife was there.
Yeah, I know you guys were there. And I was like, that might be too much.
I told Bess, I said, if he wants a raise, tell him to come down here and take a picture with me. He'll get a raise the next day.
Yeah. You know, that was a funny thing. But even if they would have offered more money, it's just a point where there's nothing there for me to do.
Yeah.
To sell out would have been to take more money and stay, because I would have been giving up on a lot of passion, you know. And it comes a point, you know, especially in our lives, we've done well enough that, you know, we're able to put groceries in the fridge and the pantry's full. So,
right.
You know, we're blessed and I'm grateful for that. But now it's finding a place where my expertise and my talent is going to be used, mm-hmm. you know, and that. It means everything at the point right now, you know, because I still want to wrestle. I'm already in my head, and I know you do this because this is an old-timer thing. I'm driving down the road. I've already had matches in my head with Darby Allin. I've already had matches in my head, you know, with Lance, you know what I mean? And like that, I've had matches in my head with Cody, even though I've already wrestled Cody before, and you and Kenny, like, and Mox, like, different scenarios, because that's what you do when your creative mind is the right place and you're thinking about pro wrestling in a positive way, that's fun to do.
Yeah.
You know, but when you're in an environment like I was, it wasn't fun for me to think about wrestling. I didn't want to watch Raw. I didn't want to watch SmackDown.
Right.
You know, like
I think a lot of guys that you mentioned will probably, when you do work with them, will be very pleasantly surprised just how
I hope so.
How good you can be, how good you are.
I hope so.
Because I think a lot of people didn't get a chance to see that, especially when you talk about the last 5 years, for example. Very sporadic appearances.
Once in a while I got to run. Like, I got to have some really good matches with Braun. Like, we did those three matches that were three pay-per-view matches that should have been on a pay-per-view, and they were all on Raw. They were free.
Right.
But again, they're on Raw. I don't even get paid. Man, we didn't get paid to do Raw.
That's
remember?
Right. Yeah.
TVs are free unless you work the dark after Raw. Then you got. Then it was anywhere. You know. Then it was a slight bump.
Exactly. Exactly.
Right.
Did you end up having a conversation with Vince before you left, or did or after?
No,
or?
I actually didn't. Vince and I didn't talk. I dealt with Mark Carano, and we went back and forth a little bit. And I wanted to leave, and. That was that. I just the money was okay. The terms, the years was a little light, you know. It felt more like they weren't looking at me as a talent they wanted to invest in again. They looked at it as something disposable.
To hold on. Oh,
yeah. When they give you a year, they offer you a year. That's like, well, that's you're not investing too much in me for it, because a year goes by pretty quick.
Right, right, right.
You know what I mean? And that the writing's on the wall. You know that. They're moving on, and I need to too. So when I came over here to AEW and we finally made the announcement, you know, actually Vince called me.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and that's the first time I'd spoken to him in 6 months.
Wow.
Because the TVs that I went to before, you know, he was unavailable or he wasn't there, and I really just didn't get a chance to sit down and talk to him, you know. And I knew the writing changed for me and Vince in our relationship. For years, I was always show. You know, in the last year, it's been Paul. Mm-hmm. So that's a subtle thing in his mind where, you know, he's already shipping me off to Shady Pines.
Right.
You know what I mean? And it's like, it's
hard. The show is his creation and Paul's just the guy, right?
Paul's just the guy. Paul's his friend that, you know. Yeah. I mean, you know, there's no animosity. There's no heat there at all. Like, he called me and
what'd he say?
Said, congratulations. You know, he said, you're going to do fantastic over there. You're really going to help their company, and you have a lot to help here. Like, it was a really good.
That's cool. Yeah.
Yeah, it was a very classy move, you know.
Well, you guys had such a long relationship.
We
you
do have you a long relationship. I think that's one of the things that hurts a lot, because I've been through so many things with him. Like, my first media training when I first went to WWE, I was in a limo with Vince in New York doing radio stations with him.
Oh, wow.
He was on my media day.
Yeah.
You know, so I learned about so many things, and that knowledge that you get from him that, you know, if you spend any time around him, the dude is brilliant, you know. And we've had a lot of good times. All the trips to Iraq and Afghanistan.
He always took you to Iraq.
We were always fun. I mean, you know, it was one of those kind of things. And it was always good seeing him in that environment, because you got to see that alone time with Vince, you got to see Vince.
Yeah, the guy.
Yeah, the guy, not the chairman of the board and all that other horse shit that he has to do. Like, Vince will step on your shoe and say, flat tire. I mean, what are we, in eighth grade?
Yes.
Yeah, you know, he'll short sheet my bed. You know what I mean? I got to get in my bed and my bunk in Iraq, and the bed's short sheeted, you know? One night he turned the heater on in my room, you know, because, you know, I hate being hot.
Right.
So we're gone all day. We come back that night. I walk into my room, and it's hot in the desert, and I'm ready for this ice cold room, and it's 100 degrees. And he walks by, is something wrong with your heater, pal?
And you're like, come on, really?
Come on, man. Like, we're, you know, we've been going 15 hours, man. Yeah. We've had 5 helicopter rides, you know. We've met over 7,000 troops today. Like, I just want my room to be cold. And he just loves that stuff. You know?
Do you remember when we went that one year?
Oh, he popped my mattress?
We were in Saddam Hussein's castle, and they built that giant bed for you.
Yeah.
Do you remember that? And then that's when you had to wear that mask because you had sleep apnea or something.
Apnea, yeah.
It was like summer camp where, like, all the fat kids over there can't breathe on that giant bed.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. That's right. Yes. And that bed was like Mount Olympus.
To get up there.
Like, it was up to your shoulder. You know, like I was scared I was going to get out of bed in the middle of the night, break my neck, falling off. I'm like, how big do these guys think I am? Yeah, I was talking about the time we flew over on the C-17, and I had bought a mattress from the Dick's Sporting Goods, and I was going to put a place back there because I don't fit in the...
To sleep on the floor of the plane.
Sleep on the floor of the plane, blow up my air mattress. I'll be comfortable because I don't fit in the little chairs or anything like that. I get to sleep about an hour. Just that you're starting to get that real comfortable sleep. The sleeping bag's over you. You're good. All of a sudden, like that, and I look up. Something happened to your mattress, pal. Like, he's such a bully. Like,
I know, total frat house bully, right?
Yeah, just a frat house bully.
Ogre in Revenge of the Nerds.
Yes, he is. Yes, he is. I stayed up on one of those flights one time. I was going to stay awake as long as he did. We were together, and, you know, the entire trip, he never closed his eyes. He worked the whole time.
Yeah. He hates it when people see him sleeping.
Yeah, he won't sleep. Yeah.
Yeah. I took a picture of him sleeping on one of those trips, and I showed
him. Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I said, you actually do sleep. He didn't laugh. He didn't smile. He said, delete that now. And I was like, okay, crazy man.
I remember that, yeah.
He didn't find it funny.
No, he did not find it funny. But so, you know what? But that's that same insanity is what's driven him and built an incredible company.
No, but it's cool that he called you. Like you said, that was a classic.
No, it meant a lot to me personally because, you know, and there is a time when, you know, business is business, and you have to move on with the
product. He knows that.
He gets it, and I get it too. But I appreciate the call. Yeah. So
let's talk about our new boss, Tony Khan. What was the talks like with him?
It was really interesting because I started talking to Tony after my contract expired because I waited until I was done with WWE before I reached out. I needed to make it clear to Tony because there were things in the past where people would try to come over here and then they would go back. I wanted Tony to know.
Should try and start a bidding war.
Yeah, that my intent was I was coming here and I wanted to be here. And if it worked out with him and I, but I was free in the clear to come here and I wasn't playing a bidding war game. And I think the first time we talked on the phone, we probably talked for 3 hours about wrestling and psychology. And it was really interesting to talk to someone who is also very knowledgeable and has an incredible database in his brain of everything that's happened, but also understands what I'm saying when I talk psychology and what I think and what I can contribute. And, we just had a great time chatting, and we talked probably 3 or 4 times on the phone for, a couple hours at a time. And then I drove up on a Wednesday afternoon. It was real quiet. You guys had taped the week before, and him and I watched Dynamite in the office, and
right on.
Yeah, ordered out some Mortons, and
that's cool.
And we did my deal in about 15 minutes.
That's great.
That was it. It was just terms were fair, everything was good. I was comfortable and secure. We shook hands, and that was that. And he sent the contract over. Like, it was literally, I think, the easiest contract negotiation I've ever done in my life. Because I've, for so long, I've had to be so paranoid with everything. This had to be done. Because if you took something for granted and you went, hey, it's not in your contract, pal. You know what I mean?
Yes.
So, and then with Tony, I had every single question I had was answered, was already thought of, already taken care of. And that's a scary feeling, too, because you're you're still waiting for that.
Shoot a drop.
Something to happen. And so far it's just been my first night when I came out talked about just before Revolution, the pay-per-view. I said the wrong pay-per-view name.
Okay.
Evolution. You know what I mean? And nobody said a word to me. I didn't find out till the next day that I said the wrong. When I was watching it at home, I went, holy shit, the pay-per-view's Revolution. if I would have made that mistake in WWE, I would have had to go back out and apologize and say Revolution,
And you also would have been given that entire promo written out for you. I guarantee that probably no one even told you what to say.
No.
A bullet point.
No, that was it. That was it. And Tony said that I want you to let everybody know that we're having a big star come out Sunday at Revolution pay-per-view, But I just, and I had talked to Tony, I said, hey, man, sorry. He says, don't worry about it. It's fine.
Yeah.
The point got across. Everybody knew what you were talking about. Don't worry about it.
It's funny because the very first time we were in Daly's place, we had a pre-COVID 5,000 people here. And I had a promo to do. It was on some kind of a special that we did, like a Fight for the Fallen or something that we called it. And it was the first promo I had done in 20 years on TV that had no script or writer working with me or whatever. And I remember thinking, okay, People say you're a good promo. Now you got to prove it. Do you remember how to do this? And I went out there and just did the promo. And after, I felt so liberated after, with like live without a net, have a little bit of an idea where I want to go with it. Right. But that was it. Nobody knew what I was going to say. Nobody second guessed it, third guessed it, 15th guessed it. And it was awesome.
And they didn't take the energy out of it. That's
exactly
the thing sometimes.
Right.
Like, it used to drive me nuts doing promos in WWE because I had a guy that's 5'8" writing a promo for me who doesn't understand what it's like to be a giant. And a chairman of the board who thinks I should tell everyone how tall I am and how much I weigh.
Every time. Yeah.
I'm 7 foot tall. I'm 500. Like, I know how big I am. I just sound like a dumbass because I got to remind everybody, you know. Sure, there's a psychology of it. It's repetitive. Act like everybody's brand new to the show. I understand all that business in it. But as a talent, when you're cutting promos, and I didn't cut anywhere near the amount of promos that you did. You know, for some reason, they didn't like the way I talked or something. So I didn't cut that many promos. But still, I never got a chance to put any flavor on it, to put any style on it.
Be yourself.
To be myself.
Yeah.
Because it was all written out for me. I had to do this, this, and this, 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 and this. And God forbid if it wasn't executed like it was written.
Right.
You know, because you go in and then you get the, you know.
Well, even when you first came out, you said, did you see this turn coming?
Yeah.
Great line. And he said, when I had hair and lots of...
I had long hair and a bright future.
Bright future. Like, that's funny.
That's my
wit. And that's so you, too.
It is me. And I got to be me. Yeah. Granted, it's not, you know, what people are used to seeing as the big show. Like, Vince used to give me grief all the time. So, you're being Paul. I don't want Paul. I want Big Show. And it's like, okay,
but they would have you come out as Show of Mania dressed as Hulk Hogan. Like, what the f*** does that even mean?
Well, that was just because... They didn't know what the f*** to do.
Right. Well, that's my point. You're being too much Big Show, too much Paul. Like, what is the Big Show? Is it a killer? Is it a comedy guy? Yeah. Is it a combination? Let me know and I'll do it.
You know, we know what Paul is. Paul is a fun-loving jokester who loves to give people shit, loves to get shit back until I get pissed off. And then I'm a 900-pound gorilla in your midst. You know, like, you know, they lock the doors in some overseas airport and we can't get in. I'll happily kick the door down. You know, you might want to come open the door while you still got one.
Yeah, exactly.
You know.
How did you feel when Tony first had the idea for you to do color commentary?
Thrilled, because that's what we talked about in our meeting. Because Tony was really receptive about having me here. Really out of, which was overwhelming and humbling, but for my mind, you know what I mean? And then, well, what do you want to do? You know what I mean? I said, well, you know, I definitely want to wrestle. I said, but I've always wanted to do color commentary. Okay. And he said, that's fantastic. I think you'd be great at it. You know, and he gave me the opportunity to head up Elevation with Tony Schiavone that night. So that was one of the things, like, oh, you want to do comment? I've got a place for you. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, right away, he had a vision from just us talking on the phone those few times before. He had a vision of what I can do, and is confident in me to carry that off. So
he's really good at that, thinking of different angles of things. Because when I heard color commentary, it's something that I had never, ever once thought of you doing. And as soon as he told me that you were doing it, I was like, that's perfect. Yeah. He'll be great at it for the same reasons that we just discussed.
Well, it's going to be fun for me because, like, my favorite color commentators back in the day, number one, my favorite of all time has always been Gordon Solie.
Mm.
Or then you go to Jesse Ventura. You go to Gorilla Monsoon. Even Vince, in some of his days, Vince was a great color commentator.
He was
amazing at it. You know what I mean? And trying to take that, the wrestling knowledge. I mean, I've been around 4 decades. I've wrestled pretty much anybody that's ever been anybody in this business I've worked with. And I'm pretty blessed for that and grateful for that. You know, so bringing that experience out, not to get myself over because I got a microphone. Get the talent in the ring over to help them. Because a lot of times when I hear, you know, commentating nowadays, it's, you know, they're all little jokes or excerpts on how funny they are, or they think to be entertaining, they got to bash the guy next to them. You know, I don't give a fuck about the commentators. Tell me about the talent in the ring. Tell me about them. Tell me, give me your insight as to why they made that decision there. What was the talent thinking? You know what I mean? How do you get that talent over where you can get people to understand in the talent's mindset maybe why they made this decision?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's a desperation. It's easy for us to call the shots out here. It's completely different in the heat of the fire. You know, that kind of a thing. And help do your job on commentating is to help get the talent in the ring over. So that's what I'm looking forward to. Hopefully I can pull that off. And plus, it's great for me to sit that close, to watch those matches, to understand those talents, because I'll talk to the talent before the show on their matches, and I'll get a chance to basically interview these guys to prepare for my job that night. So when it comes time, when I start wrestling, or if I start working with these guys, I'll already know them.
Yeah.
Because in WWE, I'd been there so long, I could work with anybody because I was established for so long.
Right.
I was there when they got there. I had seen them on the live events working. I knew what we were doing with them creatively. So, but my job was easy working with them by the time they got to me. This is what I'm trying to do to prepare for coming up pretty soon.
Well, it's one of those things. There's two things you can't teach. One is how to be a giant, which you are. And the other one, more importantly, in a lot of ways, is experience. And having that 25-plus years. I mean, that's one thing in our locker room. It's a very young locker room in a lot of ways. Like when we first started, Dustin and I were the two guys that had even live TV experience. I mean, Cody had some too, but it was very much... we have to now basically train a whole locker room of guys. Even Kenny Omega and the Young Bucks and those guys, they hadn't really done live TV before. Yeah. So to have a guy like you who's been through the wire and headlined WrestleManias and opened up WrestleManias and everything in between, that's invaluable once again.
Well, that's one of the things I think I can help them with, because I can help them uncomplicate it. Because sometimes they get so much input from so many sources, and I know because I was there in the beginning, it becomes a bit overwhelming.
Right.
So explain it in such a way so the talent understands, relax, have fun, be you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and if you can figure out who you are through trial and error, because it's trial and error for all of us, this business opens up and there's nothing you will do that will be as fun as being in that ring in front of a live crowd, just completely tearing the house down when that crowd is hooked on every single thing you do. There's no better feeling in the world. There's no better feeling.
As we start to wind down here, how was it for you when you first came in? Were you a little nervous when you walked in the back?
Nervous. I was a new kid on campus.
That's right.
Yeah. I was there new, and I made sure that I shook every single person's hand. All the stuff that I never had to do in WWE for years because they had to come shake my hand.
Right, right.
Now I'm the new kid.
That's classy, though, man. These people respect that.
Well, I wasn't going to come here. My big thing is, like, you know, like they offer to get me a dressing room and all these other things, you know, and I don't ask for any of that because I'm not coming in here to be that guy.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? I want to contribute. I want to work with everybody. I want to get myself over. I'm building a new brand. We're building the Paul White brand, whatever that turns into. We're building the Paul White brand. We're building the AEW brand. And I want to build the talent around me. So my thing is I want everyone to be accessible to me. You know, and that's my thing. I don't, you know, male, female, you know, by gender, you know, whatever it is, come talk to me. If it's wrestling psychology, my door is always open.
Mm-hmm.
If something sucks, I'm going to tell you.
What'd you think of the backstage environment in comparison?
Incredible. Incredible because it feels like what you want. It's supportive and the hunger is palpable, if that makes any sense. But the hunger is palpable for everyone to succeed, not just themselves. That's the difference. It's not like, you know, when we would do matches in WWE and you'd come through the curtain and nobody would say shit.
Right.
Because they didn't want to put you over.
That's right.
A couple of your buddies would come up and say hi and say good job and stuff like that. But you didn't get the group thing. And that was that way for a long time.
Absolutely.
Towards the end, you know, when I was the old guy on the roster, it got a lot more supportive when we were doing those shows and everybody was working with everybody and stuff like that. But when I first got there, nobody put anybody over when they came through the back.
Well, they would never say a word. That used to drive me crazy. Like, come on. Really?
You can't tell somebody had a good match?
Yeah,
that's insecure?
That's the thing in here. Like, and being in this biz for 30 years, this is a real team. And I think that's one of the reasons for it is because Tony builds teams.
Yeah.
He built the Jacksonville Jaguars. He built the Fulham Football Club,
right,
which went from the one league to the Premier League, which is one of the hugest things you could do. He built that roster.
He's tied in the top right now.
Well, yeah, exactly. And then that's big money, and it's a big deal. He's built our team, the AEW team, similar way. You've got the vets that can teach. You've got – and they can still go. You've got the guys in their prime. You've got the rookies with huge potential, and we've got a great kind of minor league system of people that are ready to go as well.
Right.
So it's really a team atmosphere.
He's done a great job, and that's what you see here, and that for me is exciting and worth its weight in gold.
I love the no more BS catchphrase. That's
Thank
a great
you.
Idea. That's
Thank
just pop
you.
In your head.
Yeah, that's it seemed apropos because you're trying to think, like, I never got merch.
Right.
You know, I pay you to sell tickets, not sell merch.
Right.
You know, like, you're not a merchandise guy.
And well,
yeah, I'm working.
Mean, right?
What does that mean? Like, I'm the one that's making John Cena look good. Can I have a shirt too? Like, you know.
Yeah.
You know, but, you know, that's the kind of things, you know, you take those lumps and you, oh, okay, and you roll on.
Accept it, yeah.
You accept it because it's written on the wall. It's written in stone. That's the way it is, you know.
Last few questions. Who here, I mean, you mentioned a few guys, but is there some guys that you're really excited to work with?
My number one pick right now, and I don't know if it'll work out because I'd have to be a heel, but if I get to be a heel at some point, Darby Allin.
Mm.
I'm just a huge fan of his presence and character in the ring. And as a babyface, I want to work with Kenny.
Mm.
Without a doubt, because Kenny's got that fire. Hangman Adam Page, I like a lot too. He's got a good get up and go. But Kenny, I see a lot of stuff in Kenny that, like, he's that aggressive, nasty heel that I could sell for and have a lot of fun with.
That was a suggestion I made to Tony, because Kenny's a guy who works all styles, but he works a lot of guys his size.
Mm.
To work with you, I think would really challenge him in the best possible way.
Best possible way, and we put the right thing together, we could tear the house down. I tell you another guy that this might sound crazy who I could tear the house down with also is Ray Phoenix.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because I used to have all those good matches with Ray.
With Ray Mysterio, yeah.
So Phoenix and I have no doubts in my mind because we could just really rock the friggin' house. So, but, you know, then there are other guys that, you know, that I'm getting to learn to know and stuff. Like Lance right now, Lance Archer's got that big, aggressive, nasty heel
yes.
thing going. And I think him and I could do really well together.
I could buy him really hurting you.
You could buy him hurting me. Even Cage, after the match he had with Sting and stuff, like, I'm looking at him like, dude, in that thing, you look like the Hulk back there, you know? So I can see him also being one that could, you know, really inflict some damage to a knee or something like that, you know, to put me in a vulnerable position. And it would be believable if a Cage body slammed me or something like that when the time's right, you know. And Luchasaurus, he's got one hell of a spinning back kick. I don't think I've ever seen a bigger guy that's got a kick that nice.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, and there's some things I'd love to work with him on. And
well, he's the guy when he came in, I said, we need you to be a big guy.
Yeah.
Because this is pre-Lance Archer. We didn't have a lot of big guys. It's like, right. I understand you've been working with all smaller guys, but we need you to be a big guy.
Right.
Less leaving your feet and more just kicking guys' asses, and he's right. slowly getting it. You know,
he's getting, and there's a lot of insights, and I can help him with some to help to avoid some pitfalls that you get into working that way,
right?
Where he can really accentuate that his size and presence and more credibility.
Mm.
You know what I mean? And that's just experience helping somebody else out. That's all that is. You know, once he gets a little feel for that. You know, I think he'll come along real nice.
Last two questions for you. First one, you had so many classic matches in WWE. is there one that stands out for you that you think, oh, that's one of my favorites?
I love the matches I did with Braun. One of my favorite feuds as a singles is definitely my feud with Sheamus. You know, because Sheamus? Yeah, I used to be covered in bruises.
He works tough, yeah.
Like, I mean, and he doesn't bitch about it. He works tough right back. He can work tough, and that's fine with me. I'm as snug as you are.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, I can work very light. You don't even know I'm there. If you want to get snug, well, I'll get snug too. I tend to work a little bit more aggressive as a heel. I tend to work a little bit more snug. But with Sheamus, it was nice to be in that kind of a fight. Like, we got to do a lot of things that I didn't get to do with some other guys, you know. Feuds I had with Lesnar, you know, were always great.
Classic stuff.
You know, and John Cena. Mm. You know, John Cena and I were all over the world. We used to laugh, like, every 6 months, you know, John and I would have a couple-week run together.
Somewhere,
and then we'd work, like, you know, 6-8 weeks in the house shows and against each other.
It's a money-making main event if you go to any
country. We did it all over the world, and we did it in China. We did it South Africa, everywhere. So it was always It was always fun working with John because it was no headache. John was going to hit me with three punches, hit the ropes, take a shoulder tackle, and sell to the finish. Like, you know, he would come alive here and there, but he got working with me, and it was so easy. He made me the giant, and he was the...
It's not hard to do.
It's not hard.
You're the giant. That's easy.
If you do that, then I'll do my part, and we'll tell a great story, yeah. You know.
Last question for you. What's your favorite Jericho Big Show moment?
Oh, my God. Dude, we've had so many, but the one that always makes me laugh is the bickering that you and I would do where we were such a close tag team. Like, other guys would think we were hot, but we were just
right.
Bickering like an old married couple. And I remember we were in Europe, and I was dressing like right next to the card. But I was asking you when we were on the card, right. And you didn't want to get up across the room because the card was right next to me. You're like, it's right there. Read the card. I said, I left my glasses. I said, I don't have my glasses. Well, then put your glasses on.
Yeah, the glasses on top of your head. Put your glasses on.
Yeah.
And put like your glasses on, Edith. You know? Yeah,
and everybody's looking at us like, you know, are these guys going to fight? You know.
My all-time favorite is that Christmas thing where I dressed up as Santa, yeah. And I sat on your lap and... You asked if you could have your tag team partner back, and then we had all those little people come out, and it was just this big freak show, weird throwing little guys around.
Yeah, that was fun. We had so much fun, but you know, I don't think if people realized when we were tagging, I never made one pinfall.
Yeah, that's right.
I never did.
But you always caused it.
I always caused it, and that was why we were such a good team, because you know, you were the energetic one that ran the mouth, and then there I was where I needed to be, and it just worked. Jericho was definitely my favorite tag team for that. Plus, for me, let's be honest, you were so detailed-oriented on everything in the match that my job was easy. You're like, okay, you're going to be a giant, and then you would go after everything mm-hmm. else to make sure the match was done appropriately, mm-hmm. people did this and did that. You know, and if they weren't selling right in the match, you would yell at them from the apron. But I loved it. But that was the easiest tag team I think I ever worked with. And I had fun with Kane. Randy Orton and I are undefeated as a tag team.
Oh, nice.
Now, the couple of times that we used to call each other Hammer and Chisel, but they never put us together. But whenever Randy Orton and I tied together, we were undefeated. I think we're like 11 or 12-0 or something like that. You know, that was Hammer and Chisel, baby. Yeah, that was our thing.
Well, dude, it's great to have you here with us.
Thank you.
The third company we've been in is going
to
be a huge.
Yeah, you and I know when to step off a sinking ship, don't we?
We do. I think we're going to be on this one for a while, though.
Me too. Me too. Definitely.
Thanks, man.
Thank you.